Hello, you're watching Press TV News, coming to you live from Tehran.
Many thanks for joining us this hour. Well, polling stations in Turkey have closed as unofficial results show a majority of the voters have backed the new changes in the constitution. We must warn our viewers that the following video contains images of flash photography, and the ballot counting is still underway. About 50 million Turks, or two-thirds of the population, were eligible to vote. Ruling Justice and Development Party proposed a wide range of reforms, including changes to the constitution and judiciary. The amendments also aim to curb the powers of the military. The European Union has welcomed approval of constitutional reforms, describing it as a step in the right direction. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has praised the positive results, saying they will bring Turkey's constitution more in line with European norms.
I believe the vote that people will cast today is important for the country's democracy and freedom. I also see this as a test which can push the country forward.
Well, correspondent in Turkey, Jody Sabral, has given us more information about the comments by Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan after the vote, the referendum process, and the results. Now, this video also contains images of flash photography.
Prime Minister has announced that preliminary results show that approximately 58% of votes counted have approved 26 amendments to the 1980 Constitution. Prime Minister called this a victory for democracy, that he would put an end to the military constitution of 1980. So a victory for the Yes camp today. The Prime Minister said that this would increase the bar of democracy and justice in Turkey, and the referendum did highlight some problematic areas for AK Party, in particular the southeast, in Diyarbakir, Turkey's most densely populated Kurdish city, where turnout was very low, 33%, a record in fact. So we expect that the higher board of elections will announce officially in the Gazette, the official Gazette, tomorrow or Tuesday.
Israeli shelling has killed three Palestinians and injured three more in the Gaza Strip. Medical sources say the incident happened in the town of Beit Hanun. They say the victims included a 91-year-old farmer and his teenage grandsons. There are reports that the attack came in response to rocket fire from Gaza against southern Israel. The rockets reportedly did not cause any injuries or damage. The incident comes a week after Israeli airstrikes killed one Palestinian and injured two others in southern Gaza. Press TV's Yusuf Al-Helu gave us more details about the fatal Israeli attack.
Israeli tanks shelled the northern part of the Gaza Strip town of Beit Hanun, killing three Palestinians, including 91-year-old man and his two of his grandsons. And also they were actually working in their field, according to witnesses. They were farmers working in their field. And also Israeli warplanes are still hovering the skies of Gaza. Ambulances found it difficult to evacuate the wounded as Israeli tanks were present in that area. Now this attack comes as the people here celebrate the Eid al-Fitr, the third day of Eid al-Fitr. So it seems now we will witness more escalation as the Israeli army claiming that some projectiles were fired from Gaza into southern Israel.
Israel's prime minister has kept silent on the U.S. president's call to extend a temporary settlement freeze due to expire this month. On Friday, Barack Obama called on Israel to extend its moratorium as long as direct talks continue. But Benjamin Netanyahu has, in his latest remarks, ignored the call. Instead, he has called on the Palestinian Authority to recognize Israel in any agreement. Acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas has said he will not recognize Israel. He has also threatened to pull out of direct talks unless Israel halts all settlement activity on occupied Palestinian lands. Tel Aviv's 10-month temporary settlement freeze on occupied West Bank land will expire on September the 30th. Abbas and Netanyahu are expected to continue direct talks in the presence of U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in Egypt on Tuesday. Well, to discuss this further, we're being joined by Mohammed Awais. He's a Middle East expert joining us all the way from Washington. And many thanks for joining us here on Press TV. Now, even during the first round of talks, settlement construction continued in the West Bank in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Do you think the compromises made by the Palestinian Authority to come to talks will just provide more fodder for insistence on further compromises?
Well, Israel never stopped building settlements and adding to existing settlements, and never stopped building the separation wall, the apartheid wall between the West Bank and the west of the Green Line, because I don't recognize something called Israel. It's west of the Green Line of the 1967 war. And Israel did not give anything, even though the Palestinian Authority have given up a lot, including arresting the resistance movement people and the resistance fighters. They have arrested many of them throughout the year, and then they arrested more of them in the last month. So what is there to compromise over? There is nothing else to give. Israel, when they ran out of things to ask the Palestinians to give them, they are asking them to give up the rights of the Palestinians who live under Israeli occupation from 1948 by recognizing Israel's right, Israel as a Jewish state. And then what else is left? If Israel is a state for the Jews, then there is nothing else to negotiate over. And this is an obstacle to any chances of peace in the Middle East. And I think the biggest obstacle now is the imported Jews who came from 1896 and on until today. They keep bringing all these Jews who come and put obstacles and they put terms in order to make it almost impossible for both people to live on the land. So I think they wanted all or nothing. The Israelis wanted all or nothing. And then the Palestinians should also go for all or nothing, and they should work on getting rid of all the imported Jews who came from all over the world in order to settle the Palestinian land, and let the West come and do something if they are that worried about Israel. We should, I think, in the Middle East, all the Middle East people should take a very strong position, either with us or against us. There is not an honest broker west of the Mediterranean Sea. I mean all of Europe, Australia, and the United States. They are not honest brokers, and they should not be even involved in getting promises from Israel that they never respected, and they should move forward in whatever they want to change on the ground by creating a powerful deterrent to the hegemony of the Israelis and these imported Jews in the region.
Right. Now, one possible scenario has been put forward that Israel would halt construction and outlying settlements, but allow building and settlement blocks closer to the West Bank. If talks continue on this basis, how legitimate will any agreement be in the eyes of everyday Palestinians?
In fact, the everyday Palestinian does not recognize the legitimacy of the government of Mahmoud Abbas, who, like I said earlier, is arresting anybody who talks about resistance on the Palestinian land. So the legitimacy of Mahmoud Abbas is in question, and his government and the people he's appointing to negotiate with the Israelis. So it is a non-binding, whatever he does, it will be a non-binding agreement between somebody who is a puppet in the hands of the Israelis and the Israelis. Mahmoud Abbas does not represent the Palestinian people. His term have ended in office, and the Palestine National Council did not convene in order to vote for an executive committee of the PLO. So the PLO itself, they are non-representative now of the Palestinian people. So he can meet all he wants with the Israelis, but it is not binding for the Palestinian people, whether inside or outside, in the diaspora, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan, and all over the world. It is not binding for any of us, because I'm a Palestinian myself. It's non-binding for us. In fact, it means nothing to us, because the terms of a peace deal should be based on the basic rights of the Palestinian people on their land from the river to the sea. And the people who left that land from the river to the sea should have all legitimate rights restored to them before any peace can be restored in the region. Or otherwise, all of them, all of these, and allow me to say, all of these dogs are barking under the wrong tree.
Right, we're going to have to leave it there. That was Middle East expert Muhammad Away speaking to us from Washington. Many thanks indeed for your insight here on Press TV, sir.
You're watching Press TV News. Iran has strongly condemned the burning of pages of the Holy Quran in the U.S. Iran's foreign minister says Washington should be held responsible. Here is more.
On the 9/11 anniversary, an American man sets fire to pages of the Quran, the holy book of more than 1.5 billion Muslims, just meters away from ground zero in front of press cameras. In Tennessee, two evangelists set copies of the Quran on fire. Desecration of the holy book was also reported in other U.S. cities. This all came after a Florida pastor threatened to torch copies of the Muslim holy book and then suspended his threat. But the plan drew fierce protest rallies across the world in any case.
People here say that they would continue their protests. But this was not only local people, Afghan religious leaders, as well as the Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai, have strongly condemned the U.S. Church plan to burn the copies of the Holy Quran in the United States.
Many Islamic countries condemn the plan. Now Iran says Washington should be held responsible for the Quran burning.
In this move that happened yesterday, the American officials need to be accountable. We are hopeful that they will have a clear response for the Muslim countries.
Iranian Foreign Minister Manoucher Mottaki said Zionists were behind the act. He also lashed out at the Western world's silence on the desecration of Islamic sanctities and said freedom of speech and insulting divine faith must be told apart. Mottaki also warned about the repercussions of what he called the heinous deed.
The consequences of the desecration of more than 1.5 billion Muslim sanctities cannot be discarded easily. The smoke from the fire they lit will hurt their own eyes.
We asked international lawyer Franklin Lam about what the average American thinks of all this and how he thinks the Muslim community should react to the desecration of their holy book.
But the average American, I think, is embarrassed, outraged, ashamed of all this, humiliated, and sorry for it, and also angry that our country, which does have the freedom of speech, witnesses a certain percentage. We have 310 million people. You're going to find a few people who want their 15 minutes of shame and fame in this form. So we cannot stop that. But I think that I don't think that the Muslim community is overreacting, but I think and I hope they will be careful for and avoid the trap that is being set. And that trap is to encourage them to violence.
Well, Britain is investigating claims that the country's troops have been involved in drug trafficking. British Ministry of Defense says there are, quote, unsubstantiated allegations that service members bought heroin in Afghanistan and use military aircraft to transport it out of the war-torn country. British troops at airports in Camp Bastion at Kandahar are under investigation and security has been stepped up. Last week, the British Ministry of Defense said coalition forces seized over $1 billion worth of heroin in the country. Afghanistan is the source of 90% of the world's heroin.
Mauritania's main opposition group has finally recognized Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz as the country's president. The recognition by the Rally for Democratic Forces comes more than a year after Mauritania's disputed vote. The party says it's taken the decision in light of challenges facing the country. Despite protests by the opposition, the June 2009 vote was recognized by the international community as free and fair. Mauritania's government was overthrown in August 2008 in a military coup. The leader of the coup, General Abdelaziz, later resigned from the military and ran for president, winning more than 50% of the votes.
You're watching World News here on Press TV. These are the headlines this hour. Turkey votes for constitutional reforms to curb army powers. Israel kills three more Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran condemns the burning of the Holy Quran in the United States. And Mauritania's main opposition recognizes Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz as president over a year after the elections.
And just ahead here on Press TV, a cholera epidemic in Nigeria. We'll have all the details. Welcome back. Turkey's Kurdish militants call for a system of regional autonomy similar to that of Spain's Catalonia. The leader of the Kurdish Workers' Party, or the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, Murat Karayilan, says if his party is granted Catalonian-style autonomy, they will lay down their arms. Karayilan was referring to independent police and parliament of the Spanish autonomous community. He said if his demand is met, the PKK will hand its weapons to the United Nations. The PKK signed a ceasefire agreement in mid-August, which is due to expire on September 20. Kurdish armed conflict with the Turkish government has claimed some 45,000 lives so far.
Fresh violence has left 14 people dead in separate incidents in Russia, Southern Republic of Dagestan. A leading anti-terror expert died after gunmen fired on his car in the Dagestan capital, Makhachkala. In a separate incident, gunmen killed two police officers and a senior local official around 50 kilometers from the capital. Police returned fire, killing two militants. Meanwhile, security forces killed eight suspected militants after storming a house in Makhachkala. In recent years, Russia has been fighting growing militancy in the North Caucasus region of Chechnya, Dagestan, and Ingushetia.
The leader of a trade union in Britain warns of large-scale strikes against the government's plans to cut public spending. The General Secretary of the Public and Commercial Services Union says industrial action is inevitable unless the government changes direction. The union is working its way to form alliance with other trade unions to reach its goals. Meanwhile, the head of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Worker Union, RMT, has predicted that trade unions will take action together. The RMT has called for a campaign it calls civil disobedience to resist the current austerity measures. The British government plans to reduce spending in most departments by a quarter. The measure aims to tackle a budget deficit as big as 11% of the national output.
Hurricane Igor has strengthened to a Category 4 storm over the Atlantic Ocean. The U.S. National Hurricane Center said Igor is packing winds of 135 kilometers per hour. The hurricane is now about 1,800 kilometers east of the Caribbean's northern Leeward Islands. The storm is heading further west. Now, Igor is now capable of causing catastrophic damages. However, it is not considered a threat to land or energy interests at the moment. The hurricane is expected to intensify a little more over the next 3 days.
Nigeria is struggling with its worst cholera epidemic in almost two decades. The government has been trying to contain the disease, which has killed about 800 people in just 2 months. Some 13,000 more have been taken ill. The epidemic has also spread to Cameroon, Niger, and Chad, killing hundreds of others. Cholera takes hold via contaminated drinking water and breaks out in districts with poor sanitation. Despite Nigeria's immense oil wealth, the country remains underdeveloped, with more than half of the population lacking access to clean drinking water.
Well, with that, we come to an end of world news here on Press TV. Don't forget to log on to our website, presstv.ir, for more details.